If you've ever heard of Patrick Henry, you've probably also heard his famous quote, "Give me liberty or give me death," he said as the American Revolution dawned. That seems a very long time ago. It was not nearly as long ago that a woman working to get the right for women to vote called for freedom or death. Emmeline Pankhurst was a leader of the British suffrage movement, which succeeded in getting women some voting rights a century ago. She is the focus of a new one-woman play staged by Ashland Contemporary Theatre. It is called Pankhurst, Freedom or Death. Two guests in the studio, Janine Grizzard is the artistic director at ACT and the playwright and the actor. Good to see you, Janine.
Good morning, Jeff.
Thanks for joining us. Peggy Rubin is here as well. She is the director of the program. Hi, Peggy.
Hi there, Jeff. Nice to be here.
So let's talk about the choice of subject matter. I mean, obviously, we have a 100-year anniversary, so an obvious choice there, but so many figures in the effort to get women to vote on either side of the Atlantic. How did you settle upon Emmeline? Okay, we're going to argue about her first name pronunciation, I could see. Pankhurst.
Words, words, words. For me, it was all about the words. About 10 years ago, I found this speech in the Guardian newspaper's list of greatest speeches of the 20th century. For many years, I had performed Virginia Woolf's Room of One's Own, and I wanted to learn this one because her fiery rhetoric and her eloquence absolutely captured my heart. And so I did a 50-minute cutting of the two-hour original speech, which was presented in 1913 in November, and Emmeline's host in Hartford, Connecticut, was Katharine Hepburn's mother.
That's right, Hepburn's
also
from Connecticut.
Also named Katharine Hepburn, famous suffragist. And so I went down to RCC and did it for a class of a friend of mine. And the students, they wanted to know more about her. They wanted to know the movement as a whole. They wanted to know what she was doing and how she felt, not just hear her words. So I determined then that I would create this play to put it in its context. So in the play, she is creating the speech.
I was struck by the fact that it was in Hartford, Connecticut. I went to high school about half an hour east of there. And so what is it with Brits giving their big speeches in American cities? Because the Iron Curtain speech was done in Westminster, Missouri by Churchill. So, you know, it's interesting to hear that. Anyway, let's talk about Emmeline Pankhurst, because she came from a politically active family and certainly built one with her husband. And she lived for a long time. I mean, so if you wanted to round out the story, you could have gone to many other parts of her life. But this is just the speech you focused with?
This is a particular crisis in the point of the militancy movement. They all avenues to legally putting through the suffrage bill have been closed. They can't petition. They can't march anymore. Their offices have been closed. The last legislative attempt in Parliament of about five since 1905 had been shut down. And so it's a desperate hour, and they're doing a lot of militancy, not only breaking windows, but burning down empty buildings, smashing paintings in art galleries, and there's starting to be a backlash. So she's going to America to raise money, and she's working out certain questions with the audience. Why is this not working right now? What nerve in the male psyche have we touched that is making them so intransigent when their own history, men's history of reform, has been based on violence and mass demonstrations? How more lower-class men got to vote, for example, over the previous century. And so they have been telling the women, well, if you want to get your reform passed, you're going to have to do it the way we do. But when the women actually speak up and coordinate their deeds into pressure of that civil sort, the men are furious. The men can't handle the pushback from the women. And so she's working out what that could be that is causing the men to be so intransigent when, on the other side of it, they kind of want to help give them their rights and join into the modern world. So this is one of the personal internal dialogues as the play goes on.
We were talking about the Pankhurst, Freedom or Death, which is going to be put on by Ashland Contemporary Theater starting April 7th for 8 performances, written and performed by Janine Grizzard, also the artistic director at Ashland Contemporary Theater, and directed by Peggy Rubin. They're both in the studio with me. You can join the conversation on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The idea of people marching, you were telling me when you first came into the studio that this was something a bit new. I mean, the idea of marching for essentially media coverage
for
purposes.
For the media, yes. There were a lot of the women involved in the movement who were artists, famous illustrators, famous writers, and they put their creativity together with newspaper people, very sympathetic men. And the technology had developed where you could stage a demonstration, take the picture, and have it printed the next day. So they started creating events for the coverage to have their movement disseminated throughout the country, even if a demonstration was only happening in London, for example, to create a tide of witnesses, the public as a whole, witnesses to their plight, and particularly when the government started doing the force-feeding torture, when the women would hunger strike. And they hunger struck because they were not being treated as political prisoners, just vandals and thieves and, you know, brutish behavior towards inanimate objects. When the government started the feeding torture, they really prosecuted that with the media attention. So she basically set the mold for all future activism using the press as the primary tool to create change.
So in presenting this as a one-person play, I mean, Peggy Rubin, how do you direct a one-person play?
With great delight. And one of the reasons that I said yes is because I had caught Janine's fire about this subject and this great woman. And she is a giant. She has her flaws. And one of the lovely things about Janine's writing is that she lets us see those flaws and see the wondering at the mistakes and the rest of it. And she breaks your heart, really. But she also demonstrates with great flair and glory the fact that you can be a great person and still have shadows and have, you know, you don't have to be great in every way. But she set a fire in the human heart, and she set it in her daughters' hearts, and they became massively glorious leaders. Other people caught the fire. That's what we're hoping to do with this play, is just catch the fire to remind us all of our heritage, of our the woman's movement isn't over, and to remember our rights as citizens, and the full citizenship takes energy and commitment and getting out and saying something if it needs to be said. So it's just Janine set a fire, and I'm hoping that we get that burning on a good way. So
again, the play opens on April 7th for 8 performances. So are you doing it 2 different weekends, 3 different weekends?
It's 4 weekends.
4 weekends, okay.
Every Saturday and every Sunday through the month of April, mm-hmm. through the 29th. And I'd like to just add about the fire that the famous American suffragists, Alice Paul and Lucy Burns, apprenticed with Emmeline Pankhurst mm-hmm. to learn the ways of militancy, to really light a fire under the other American suffragists.
Well, and Pankhurst was not shy about these. Soldier, battle, war, enemy. I mean, she used all these terms. You talked about some of the tactics already. Did she turn off some people while she was also energizing others?
Yes.
Particularly because, you know, the things that people say to women about women as they're protesting even today, you know, terms like strident and that sort of thing. I mean, I'm sure were used
the
and much worse.
Sisterhood.
Than shrieking sisterhood, was it used?
That was the phrase used by Winston Churchill's mother, who founded an anti-suffrage society, Lady Randolph Churchill. She was an American named Jenny Jerome.
Wow, we had a conversation last week about a book about Tennessee becoming the final state to ratify the 19th Amendment, allowing women to write in the right to vote in this country, and it still sort of impresses upon the mind the idea that they were suffs and antis, and educated people,
yes,
who were against women voting,
yes.
Because they thought it was against the natural order. You were talking about the force feeding, and in fact, there was a British law that people generally don't remember the true name of, but it was called the Cat and Mouse Act, and
that's
was actually why Pankhurst was out of prison at the time?
Yes. The force feeding was getting a tremendous amount of bad press in the government. And the Home Secretary, McKenna, he wanted to find some way to combat the forcible feeding or the hunger strikes other than forcible feeding. And what they had been doing is when a prisoner was in danger of dying from not eating and then later from not drinking, which is very serious, they would be released and that would be the end of their sentence. But he had Parliament push through this act where you could hunger strike and we'll release you. You can go to hospital and then we'll recapture you and make you serve more time. And that really was designed to break the body and the will of the women, because you get slow ruin. You get disease and destruction. Emmeline herself acquired jaundice from her own hunger striking, and she never recovered.
Well, Emmeline Pankhurst, again, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the play Pankhurst, Freedom or Death, put on by Ashland Contemporary Theater for 4 weekends, starting this weekend, April 7th, Saturday and Sunday each weekend. Janine Grizzard, the artistic director at ACT, also the playwright and the actor. Peggy Ruman, the director. Your thoughts, perhaps, about Emmeline Pankhurst and women's suffrage and the struggle for women to get the right to vote on both sides of the Atlantic. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. You were talking about the words at the outset, Janine, and the quotes are rather striking. Either women are to be killed or women are to have the vote, and they will have to choose between giving us freedom or giving us death. She was not messing around.
No, she wasn't. She wasn't. She was determined to push this thing through, no matter the cost. But it's important to recognize that every woman who signed up to smash a window and then go to prison, and if they chose to hunger strike, it was entirely a volunteer thing. And we're talking about, over the course of the movement, 1,000 women being imprisoned, but hundreds hunger striking. And this is just not widely known, that there was this horrific battle where women were demonstrating a commitment and a courage to their freedom as great as any soldier on the battlefield in World War I. And grudgingly, Home Secretary McKenna acknowledged it. He said, "I do not speak in admiration. They are hysterical fanatics, but they have a courage which stands at nothing."
Wow. So on one hand, some respect, but not a great deal of affection there anyway. And you mentioned World War I, and Emmeline Pankhurst and the women did stand aside for the war, didn't they?
Absolutely. She said there's no point in having a vote if you don't have a country to vote in. So the minute war was declared, they switched immediately. They called a truce. The government let all the prisoners out. They gave Emmeline a £2,000 grant money to organize the women who had been campaigning for the vote into national service labor. And what that organization did, what their insistence, because they had proved their ability to show up and do something in this world other than maintain the home in a very organized, methodical way. So they went into the factories and they packed the munitions and they kept the country going so that the men could go off and fight the Kaiser.
Was there any quid pro quo then? I mean, there are certainly some indications that happened on the American side with Alice Paul and Woodrow Wilson that if they would stop hunger striking and support the war effort, et cetera, that they would get finally his support. Oddly enough, his wife, who was running the country after his stroke, was an anti, not a suff in America, but different stories. So, I mean, so was there some sense of, like, if you support the war effort and you know, bring your forces to bear on that, we will see what we can do after that?
As far as I know, it was a wholehearted, enthusiastic volunteering of themselves as patriots by Christabel and Emmeline. Now, the socialist daughter, Sylvia, was a pacifist, and she thought that the war, like many wars are charged with, is really about the 1% and selling arms and fights between people who really have no business fighting on the working class level. The working class people are all brothers around the world, of course. So that was where she was coming from, and it caused a split in the family. But in terms of dangling bait and saying, well, if you'll help us out, we'll give you the vote maybe after. They'd been through enough bait dangling and tricks over 10 years of acts in Parliament to try and get them to stop doing mass demonstrations. They were over bait dangling. All of their commitment was wholehearted and earnest towards saving the country.
Peggy Ruben, again to you as director. I mean, this is Janine's script from the words of Emmeline Pankhurst herself. So how do you look for opportunities as a director to punch up and punctuate what's already there?
The good thing is that it's already there in the script. And Janine's done an incredible job of of picking up the style, the flow, and many of the actual words. So it's been just, because I also adore words, it's been just a joy to see, okay, so now this part is this, and this is a she makes it very clear in both the script and we hope in the presentation itself when she is quoting from the big speech, that great speech, Liberty or Freedom or Death.
Freedom or Death. Mm-hmm.
Yes, me and Patrick Henry, we go back a long way. Anyway, so she's made that clear piece, but the rest of it is memories and enactment. And I haven't counted yet, but I think in the one woman play, Miss Grizzard plays like 12 people.
Yeah.
In addition to Emmeline. So she has this glorious way of stepping forward and becoming somebody else.
Winston Churchill.
Oh, okay.
She does a glorious Winston Churchill.
Oh, this
young
is fun.
Winston Churchill.
Okay.
No.
So one woman play, but not a one character play.
No,
that's right.
No.
It's a many character
when
play.
When we collaborated on Pompadour 5 years ago, there were 12 other characters. In one woman show, the heroine has to play everybody in their life that they interact with as they recount different episodes. So you get that immediate switch in the dialogue of, you know, now I'm this person and now I'm that person, that people find very fun.
Just a couple seconds left here. Are you hoping people get some motivation in addition to good theater out of this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is the moment. And, you know, it was always going to be the 100th anniversary of the passage in Britain. But it wasn't going to be this moment necessarily with the Parkland students and Emma Gonzalez. One of Peggy's friends said that Emma Gonzalez is the reincarnation of Emmeline because of her fiery, iconoclastic spirit. So, yes, I definitely hope that they catch the fire of that commitment and get out there and do something.
The play is called Pankhurst, Freedom or Death. It runs Saturday and Sunday, starting this Saturday, April 7th. It is a presentation of Ashland Community, that's the old name, Ashland Contemporary Theater, where Janine Grizzard is artistic director. She is also the playwright and the actor of all the characters. Peggy Rubin, the director of Pankhurst, Freedom or Death. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.